This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Hey, what's up, conversationists? This is your friendly neighborhood Ro from the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast. You're about to embark on another conversation with my friends and yours, Pat and Charles. Thanks for joining the discussion. Strap in and get ready for a brand new Conversations podcast. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Conversations. I'm Charles.
And I'm Pat, and this is episode 113. The Jedi Order is comprised of the greatest force users in the galaxy. The council governs over the Jedi with fairness and authority. Ahsoka! Jedi apostate.
Wow.
I tried. Whoa. And I can't because they were terrible.
I can't believe you suggested this as an episode.
Sorry? I'm not sorry.
You're not sorry. Wasn't your idea.
No, it wasn't.
So this is now part two of the two-part episode suite on the Road to the Ahsoka series. Part one was the shipyard blueprint number one, the Ghost.
Yes.
And this is episode two. And which could play heavily into the Ahsoka series coming out soon.
Yes.
And it's not an easy arc to go through. Let's underscore the fact that this arc starts literally after the Siege of Mandalore arc. So if you watched the second half of season 5 of the Clone Wars, you may never watch like anything ever else again because of what goes on emotionally through those two series.
Yeah, these arcs are, they're excellent storytelling, but oof.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah, so we're talking about season 5, episodes 17 through 20.
Yes.
These are the last 4 episodes of season 5. And it started off relatively innocently after the Siege of Mandalore. And the first episode aired February 9th, 2013.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because evidently in Canada, it aired on February 8th.
Really?
That's the intel I have.
Wow. That's rare. Wait a second. February 8th, what, 2017?
Maybe. It was unclear. Oh, I'm sorry. It will release February 8th.
2024. The spoiler alert then, of course.
Yes. So you guys got it first by, I don't know, 24 hours maybe. Who knows?
Wow.
But
well, we feel special.
You should. You got to suffer first.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. So basically, it was the start to a bunch of bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was a trap, as one would say. It was very perfectly orchestrated.
Yeah, absolutely. And Anakin and Ahsoka weren't even on the planet when this explosion happened at the Jedi Temple hangar, which is the cataclysmic event that launches the entire 4-episode arc. And they, of course, come back, and Jedi Council is like, what's going on here? And how did this happen? And the fact that they were off-planet actually helped the planned investigation into this event. Because, as Mace Windu said, you know, it's going to be impartial review, free of assumptions, right? And which the council never does, in fact. So it's interesting for Mace to say that, which is interesting. So they arrive back. There's 5 Jedi that were killed, scores of clone troopers, even some civilians that were killed in this explosion in the hangar, which, of course, is unheard of. Like, how would that get by through all this security? And that leads, yep, you know, to suspicions that it could be anybody. And I think even Yoda says that no one is beyond suspicion at this point.
Right. And that's what kind of makes it such a perfect plan, because you've got this detonation that got through everything. So mm-hmm. it could be, you know, someone delivering cargo, or it yeah. could be, you know, a council member, you know, mm-hmm. or it could be a general or a captain or really anyone with any access to where they were.
Right. And or Jedi. That's with mm-hmm. this type of high level explosion that you can't just walk in there unless you have the clearance going in. So everyone's on edge, including the clones, because a whole bunch of them were killed. And you can tell throughout the entire 4-episode arc that all the clones feel a special connection for all the wrong reasons to this event, because so yes. many of them were killed. And it was interesting to see that, like, because they have that strong brotherhood. Obviously, the same thing with the Jedi, but their stoicness keeps them at bay, looking for the facts versus the emotion side of it. So for me, when I watch this again, I think that the clones really play the everyman, you know, the people within this story. It's like you got the civilians, of course, who are part of it, but the clones really are wearing their emotions on their sleeves, which is really interesting. And that story writing, phenomenal to see.
Yeah. Again, it shows the perceived untouchability on behalf of the Republic and these higher ups, where, you know, they can't get us here.
Right.
And then when it happens, it's like, oh, wait a minute. You have to, you know, look back at everything and question the whole of everything, because it did happen. You know, how could we have our guard down to such a point where something so catastrophic could take place?
Yeah. You know, they're on their high horse at this point, right? And this is certainly a wake-up call for sure. So Ahsoka and Anakin start their investigation, and to no one's surprise, Windu assigns also an investigative droid called Russo, because of course he can't trust anybody. And you'd also then assume that this droid is recording everything, making sure they're doing nothing wrong, even though that they're partial and free of assumption. Guess what? Step one, we don't believe you. So
right.
Jedi Council's going off, and which is really some cool animation. Like the Russo, the droid, is able to recreate what happened in the blast. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
And they find out one character called Jakar Bomani was actually involved in the explosion.
Yes.
And not only is he involved in the explosion, he was the explosion.
Yeah.
Which is kind of disturbing to see. It's like, oh, wow. And it involved explosive nanodroid technology. So very specific, yeah. And that's how they smuggled it in. So they do their first report back to the Jedi Council, and literally the first words that we Jedi Council again, Mace, so you found nothing so far. And my God, can they make this guy less unlikable? It boggles my mind.
You know, by the end of this discussion, I'm not surprised that Ahsoka is in the position she's in. Let me just say that.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
Come on.
Just put that out there.
Yeah. So basically they follow this lead from the bomb to his wife, Jakar's wife, and you know, basically she was like, he didn't do it, mm-hmm. you know, he had nothing to do it. He happened to be here, and well, you know, they do prove that it was him. But he, you know, he wasn't like a suicide bomber. He wasn't doing something for any sort of ideologic crusade or anything. Mm-hmm. He was used.
Yeah, she was feeding him the nano droids in his food. So he was like an innocent tool, which is nasty to think about, and puts Leta, his wife, in a very strange light.
Definitely something more is at play that obviously they need to investigate further to get to the bottom of.
Right. And so obviously they confront Leta and try and withdraw more information out of her. Anakin's anger at this point is like bubbling, you know, and we're starting to march towards Revenge of the Sith. So his anger spurts are getting more and more intense. And she at one point is recipient of that, because he's really intensely trying to find out what's going on with her. So she says to that, when he is questioning her, very interestingly, she says to him, you're dealing with things that you don't understand. And he's like put in a position of like, what the heck is she talking about? And at this point, Russo, the droid, has already concluded that no Jedi was involved in the attack. So again, it puts the Jedi Council on alert. It's like, well, it wasn't a Jedi, and we got this sort of commoner who was essentially the bomb. What's the point of all this?
Yeah, and so then again, you've got the very skeptical eye of the Council and of Mace and all, and they're obviously want answers, but they don't necessarily want the true answers. They just want answers, which is terrible.
Yes, they just want the answers they want.
it really immediately goes sideways, because you've got this eulogy, this funeral of sorts for these fallen Jedi.
Oh, yes.
And
oh,
so
my gosh,
all
yeah.
of the, you know, the high ranking Jedi and Republic mm-hmm. figures are all there. And so then
yeah.
you start to see the impact this is having on everybody. And then, you know, Yoda's like, oh, you know, don't grieve them. They're dead. Here's a light show. And you're like, are you kidding me? Give them like 3 seconds to like put them in the ground first. So, you know, it's a tough situation, because you've got these people that are trying to get through this, and the Council's like, nah, don't worry about it. And then, you know, immediately after that, you've got the wife, Leta, being turned over from Jedi custody to military custody. And it's like, well, but we weren't done talking to her. And you know,
yeah.
we still have more information we're trying to get from her. And it just becomes, you know, even more and more convoluted, as you've got this person that might have answers, but now she's being bounced around to other custodies and different chains of custody. So it's harder to get to her to ask these questions and, you know, cross-examine and these types of things. So it's like somebody's pulling strings to you make this very difficult to get to the bottom of.
Absolutely. And, you know, that the light show, that light of that eulogy, as it were, if you want to call it that, you know, that kicked off episode 18, like, which now is the Jedi who knew too much. And they move from this quasi, you know, sort of emotional moment, disconnecting the event from the investigation. It's like, well, yeah, this is bad, but hey, we got to get to the bottom of this. Are we going to look bad in this? Is there a Jedi that's going to have an impact on us? Almost like they're more worried about the optics of the explosion versus what was the actual reason for it. And so, like you said, Tarkin takes Leta into military custody. And eventually we find out that Ahsoka was requested with a presence for Leta. So she gets there and she's somewhat kind of like, okay, I'll go and see her. And everyone's like, well, great, go get some information, find out what she wants. And she gets there and I was told if I needed help that you are the Jedi in contact. And one of the guard troopers was right behind Ahsoka, sort of cocked his helmet slightly, like, what's going on here? And so the door closes and then some nasty stuff goes on.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's absolutely horrible.
She's reaching out to find out what's going on. And, you know, it's behind glass, so she can't run up to her. But she's, you know, reaching out to her, like, to indicate that she's trying to help. And it looks like she's reaching out force choking.
Yeah. And it's absolutely incriminating. Of course, there's no audio. It's just video. And it just looks literally like she's force choking to death. And she, of course, does die.
Yeah, and so obviously with the military personnel that are present in the facility, you know, she's very swiftly taken into custody.
Yeah, and so they go through the processes, again, of course, Tarkin, using his evidence-based examinations, like, you know, had you not sensed any other Jedi, you would have been able to dissuade from doing this, but you didn't. So, of course, your knowledge of what was going on, she was the one implicated in her death, therefore, now she's apprehended, now she's...
Yeah.
She's suspect number one. And of course, this has huge effects on Anakin, but also the rest of the Jedi and Plo Koon also, which is just heart-wrenching.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, obviously Anakin's first thought is to, you know, break protocol, believe it or not, and go see her to find out what the heck. And Tarkin's orders were like, nah, you ain't getting in.
Yeah.
So he doesn't, obviously, but he tries. Didn't he, like, elbow somebody in the face?
Yeah, and he wasn't pulling punches with the clones, and they held their ground.
And he was out for blood to get through to her, which, you know, you end up seeing throughout the 90% of the rest of this arc is he is fighting tooth and nail to exonerate her. And it's one of those things where she, you know, is presented with a key card.
Yes.
To to be able to escape. So, you know, she assumes that Anakin did it because he wasn't able to get to her, but he was able to get that to her. So she gets out of her cell and then like, okay, I'm out. Oh crap, I gotta run. You know, so.
Exactly, yes. And she finds like lightsabers along the way and there's like communicator panel. So like you said, she thinks Anakin's like helping her all along the way. But of course it isn't, but she's picking up all these pieces of evidence that are leading to her escape. But she's running into the clones at every corner. So there's an APB put out on Ahsoka because now she's broken out of prison.
And not only that, but it was like shoot on sight. It wasn't like, hey, bring her back into custody. It was, she gotta go.
Yeah. And that, which quickly Anakin issues the order, set weapons to stun. I want her alive. You know, it's like, whoa. Okay.
And also, I want her alive.
Exactly. That's what I thought. Now, but like, I get it because you're talking about now there was five clones killed in the blast. And now there's another three clones killed, not by Ahsoka, by this, you know, her helper, as it were, to get her out of jail. So these deaths are mounting, and all signs are pointing to Ahsoka. So the clones are like, no. Yeah, well, I'll be more than fine to take her out with a blaster.
Yeah, she's killing our brothers here.
Yeah. That's crazy. And let's take a moment to acknowledge how amazing Kevin Kiner's soundtrack to this fourth episode arc is. Oh my god! I mean, not that the rest of the series isn't good, but the build up to the tones that we see in Revenge of the Sith with the subtle Empire theme and the Force theme, like so gently laid into here, it makes the chase scenes more emotional. It raises the stakes.
Yeah, and it really captures the essence of the storyline perfectly because, you know, it leads you to these little, like you said, these little subtleties when Anakin is super pissed. And then you hear the Empire theme, and then just the quickness of the chase scenes with the intensity of the soundtrack is just it gets you, it reels you in real quick.
Yeah, and it highlights, underscores these emotions that are going on, and the darkness of it, the implications of what's going on are just hammered home by it. It doesn't stand out. It's just, you feel it after you see it. It's like, oh my gosh. And no more than it evidenced is when, at the end of this episode, well, before we have the fugitive scene, as you did those memes that posted a couple of months ago, the fugitive at the sewers there.
I Dr. didn't, Richard Kimble. I didn't kill that girl. I don't care.
Whoosh, jump. You know, and the last line of that episode, I do trust you, now you have to trust me. And that's when she jumps to, you know, to her ultimate trying to escape into the levels of Coruscant. And so that's the way that one ends. And again, the music is extremely powerful there. And those are the first two episodes of the four episode arcs. We're going to take a quick break here and hear from our sponsors. And then
when we get back, we'll cry.
Yeah, not that I haven't already. We'll be right back. Bow, bow.
The kids have the high ground at Jedi High.
This week on Jedi High, the kids get ready for a Life Day dance.
If this IG-00 unit has to put up another Life Day dance poster, it'll be my existence to end.
Man, can you believe Mr. Windu kicked Fisto out of the class just for having his communicator on?
That's such bantha poodoo.
Has anyone seen Anakin? I need to talk to him.
I just saw him leaving Mr. Mundy's Zen class. I think he was with Ahsoka.
Those two have always seemed almost too close to me.
Are you gonna ask him to the Life Day dance tonight?
I'm expecting him to ask me.
That sounds bossy. You're not a senator yet, you know.
Well, I'm going home. And he's too late now.
Look, Ahsoka. There's Padme. I've got to ask her to the dance.
She looks upset, Anakin. You better get there quick.
How? The halls are packed.
I jump, you force push me.
Great idea.
Whoa, 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 whoa!
No more force jumping through the halls where they'll be. Caution and learning must be your focus.
Yes, Mr. Yoda.
Mr. Yoda stopped Ahsoka halfway down the hall. Padme's almost gone.
Will Anakin reach Padme before the dance? Will they connect across the stars? Tune in this Friday evening after a brand new episode of Droids, Death Stars, and Depa.
A Felucia Films production.
Bow, bow. And we are back. Thank you to our sponsors. And so we covered the first two episodes of this gut-wrenching four-episode arc just before the break. And now we launch into episode 19, titled To Catch a Jedi.
Yes. Oh, boy. So she is on the run, simultaneously evading the clones and also further investigating her own framing.
I mean, what a complex situation she's in.
Oh, yeah.
And all the while, Anakin, like you said, is steadfast in his belief in her innocence. I mean, there's one person on the entire council that never wavers that this cannot be her. It's him.
Yeah, and it's very much dismissed immediately, time and time again. So they're like, we don't have all the facts. It's like, yeah, but you don't even care to have all the facts.
Right. And Mace doesn't trust Anakin to do what needs to be done. He even said that to him. Again, dismissive. Par for the course with Mace. But Plo Koon is distraught, and even he's wavering. You know, my gosh, how could this happen? And so then Tarkin eventually tosses out the sedition word and further throwing the Jedi Order altogether into deeper suspicion.
Yeah.
So Ahsoka's basically escaped into the lower levels of Coruscant to, A, like you said, do all these different things. And definitely runs into some interesting characters while she's down.
Yeah, and, the idea being that she can continue to investigate undetected. And she is so simultaneously steadfast in her innocence and so convinced that even if she went to the council and basically turned herself in, that she knew that she would be incriminated anyway. So
yes.
Anakin had tried to plead with her to just put an end to all this and they'll figure it out with the council and, with the members of the trial and all that kind of stuff, which obviously she knew would not happen. So she continues to investigate. And like you said, down in the underworld and everything, she does get a hold of Barriss Offee.
Yeah. Barriss is her friend that we see at the beginning of the four episode arc. And she's looking into the occurrence itself and leads her to, there's a warehouse that's a few levels higher. She actually landed on level 1312. Of course, I'm not 1313. 1313 would be that video game that never came about. Don't mention that to Todd at WSTR.
Yeah, no,
for him,
it's
a bad word. but not only is she in touch with Barriss, she's now also being bounty hunted by Asajj Ventress, who sees her as a cash cow.
Yeah, it's it's such a mess. There's the proverb, never be desperate enough to trust the untrustworthy.
Oh, yes.
And she's pretty desperate. And okay, so in Ventress's defense, she may want to help, honestly and truly. However, other plans are afoot.
Yeah. When she says, what star system do you think I'd want to help you? And then she says,
yes.
And then, which makes complete sense because that would be the proper response. But after Ahsoka points out their situations, Dooku betrayed you and tried to assassinate you. And here's the Jedi Order now pinning this explosion on me. We're in very similar situations. She does, does see the potential for it. For as long as it suits her. So she's willing to go along with it as long as she doesn't sniff a trap of some sort.
Right. And they're both very hesitant to partner up and try and make heads or tails of any of it because of the history between, obviously, the Sith assassin and the Jedi, yeah. Padawan. So it's like, okay, well, you know, as long as we're both mad at the Jedi, let's do this.
Yeah.
It's very well animated because they go through their interaction and then they split up.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Yes.
Then there's another interaction.
Yep.
So Ahsoka finds her way to the warehouse where the nanodroids were. And it's basically a setup where she is placed at just the right place at just the right time to be found in a warehouse with the nanobots that were part of, you know, what set the bomb off. It's like, are you kidding me? This couldn't be set up more perfectly.
No, it couldn't. And the mastermind behind all of this is playing it perfectly. You know, like you said, as they split up, Ahsoka and Asajj went their separate ways. A few minutes later, Asajj is basically ambushed by someone, a masked individual, and takes her down, impressively, by the way, because Asajj is no slouch for sure. Mm-hmm. And this person takes her lightsaber and the
helmet.
Yeah, the helmet, and proceeds to attack Ahsoka and basically forcing her into this extremely incriminating place that you just described in the warehouse, where he essentially escapes or evades, quote unquote, Asajj, because the last time she saw her, that's what she looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And she falls into this silo, essentially, surrounded by the explosives and the very nanobots that were used in the explosion. Opens the door. Who is it? It's Wolf. And takes her down with a stun. And it's, again, another nail in the coffin of this entire trial. And it just absolutely played into it, unfortunately, perfectly, from Ahsoka's part and of the mastermind for it.
Oh, yeah. So you end up with just this mountain of evidence against Ahsoka.
Yeah.
And now she's back in custody.
Yep.
It's infuriating because as the viewer, you're like, obviously she's being set up. But it's done so well that you can understand why everyone's against her, because it looks like she did it.
Yes. There's no two ways of looking at it. It's from the viewer's perspective, it's like, no, it's not her, it's this. But from the outside in, even with all of that mounting evidence, Anakin is, like I said, steadfast. But, you know, so we launch into the fourth and final episode called The Wrong Jedi, and this aired March 1st, 2013. I'll get to the dates eventually, but so March 1st, 2013 was the final episode. So she's in custody, like you said, and the Senate has requested that she be expelled from the Order so that they can have an impartial court date with Ahsoka as a civilian, so that she could at least be tried in a public court.
Yeah, which sounds like a bad idea to me, but let's do it. So, yeah, so basically, you know, they're negotiating with Tarkin on this whole thing, which, I mean, I have my own feelings on that. But, so basically she ends up getting kicked out of the Order and going through a tribunal, which, come on, how fair is that?
Oh, my God.
It's not.
And what was that tribunal called? The Chamber of Judgment.
Oh my God.
As if they need a different room to be judgmental versus just the Jedi High Council chamber, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's such a mess, man. It's such a mess.
Yes. Yeah.
So, so basically, you know, there are a couple, Jedi that are somewhat skeptical, but for the most part, they're like, yeah, let's see how this plays out. Not Anakin. He gets all pissed. And, like, yep. You can see his, like, jaw gets clenched. His fists are clenched.
Yeah.
It's like, man, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Yeah. Almost going for his lightsaber at one point. Like, it's like, wow, this is borderline stuff. But that's wonderful from that perspective. And, like, I had the exact same thought, you know, about Obi-Wan obviously sided with Ahsoka on being expelled.
Yeah.
And as Yoda said, this wasn't unanimous, but ultimately... she's expelled, and who reads the verdict? Mace. It's fitting. But my thought was, like, who do you think would have been the people who weren't for her? Aside from, obviously, Anakin, and, well, not that he was a master or a Jedi Council, but you got Obi-Wan. Do you think Plo Koon was part of that?
I mean, I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that he knew Ahsoka better and enough to know that she wouldn't be that person, you know? Just because of their history, I would hope that he would know better. But he also, he knows how to toe that line too. So it's like, you know, I would hope so.
Yeah, me too. I would hope so. And I think rest of them probably would. I mean, for sure, Mace, forget it. Get her out of here, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said, like, their mind was already made up, you know, the first episode, you know, that was it. That was done.
Yeah. And so, so this trial, as it were,
yeah,
is just rife with unfairness.
To put it mildly.
Yes. Yes, it's very much not fair in any sense of the word. So it's got like the most ridiculous sort of setups to try and like entrap her. You know, it's just it's just bad news. And so Anakin's not having any of it. So he takes a pretty bold approach with interrogating Ventress.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, she doesn't have her lightsabers. Mm-hmm. Clearly, because you know she lost them to the other person, and the force choke that he lays on her—that's just yikes, man! It's like, okay, this is like two steps away from Darth Vader, and it's for the right reason because he's desperately trying to prove Ahsoka's innocence while Padme's being her representative throughout this puppet court that Palpatine's running. But yeah, it shows the level of anxiety, the stress, the worry that he has. And, you know, after he force chokes her, he literally just calls out the entire Jedi Order. I mean, like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Like, you're the one who did this. Your entire order did this and led her to this point and led you to the situation you're in. And that really does sink in with Anakin, and it's a powerful moment for sure.
Oh yeah, my gosh! So, and it's, you know, foreshadowing obviously for Anakin, and more foreshadowing later with that. But yeah, so basically, she gets really in a bind where nothing is looking good, and then Anakin ends up seeing Varys at the temple, and he speaks with her, and of course she's saying things that are not in line with what Ventress and Ahsoka were alluding to. So it becomes a like, well, you know, I believed her, I believe her, and you're telling me something else. So it's kind of like something here doesn't add up. So of course he's cool and level headed and grabs his lightsaber and swings it at Varys.
Yeah.
Because of course he does. And so she reacts by drawing her lightsabers and igniting them. Only they're not her lightsabers. So
they're Asajj lightsabers.
Yeah. So then the jig is up, as it were, and Anakin realizes that she has Ventress's sabers. And she's a similar build to Ventress, and she's telling a different story than the two of them. Yeah, I think we've got our person. So, and she's also able to force choke. So, yeah, I think this is it.
Yeah, like as you said, you know, Ventress had said, "Hey, look, whoever has my two lightsabers, there you go," because you know I don't have them anymore. And when he gets to Barriss's quarters, he very subtly takes her lightsaber. He just sort of gently lifts it and confiscates it. And then, as you said, she reveals herself as to be the person pulling all the strings behind the scene. And he force chokes her, but Barriss puts up a fight. I mean, she is unassumingly powerful. This is against Anakin Skywalker, and she's not like a, you know, like torn to pieces within seconds. And again, we're talking the dark side of the Force. And, you know, some of it to me was that, you know, she's unassumingly powerful as part of the how the entire Jedi Council and the Jedi Order has been, you know, clouded by the Sith power. You know, she's very meek and she presents herself as milquetoast and like very helpful, but ultimately she's much more than that. And she obviously displays that during this somewhat, you know, short but a surprisingly long lightsaber battle until Anakin's able to subdue her.
He does that. He arrests her and then barges into the hearing to basically switch out Barriss Offee for Ahsoka and say, hey, this is what's actually going on, and this is the culprit, and I caught her red-handed, red-sabered. Basically, okay, this is, you know, the bottom of this.
Mm-hmm.
So, she, you know, Ahsoka gets exonerated. This one gets convicted, and all's well that ends well. So, you know, obviously Barriss does confess to that, kind of changes the whole conviction that was about to go down. So now you've got the right Jedi in custody and blah, blah, blah. However, then the Jedi Order are like, hey, listen, sorry, we absolutely, you know, betrayed our oath to our Jedi, and we turned our backs on you completely. But you want to come back in our club?
It was your trial. Your Jedi trial. You're welcome back.
Yeah, and she was like, screw you. I'm going home. So she's absolutely betrayed. So she runs out of the temple. And Anakin, you know, like I said, fighting for her and really just trying to restore her name, you know, chases after her to convince her not to leave. And then she does anyway. And as she's walking away, you do see that he is defeated. You know, he worked so tirelessly, so hard to restore her name. You know, understandably, she doesn't want to hang out with them anymore. But at the same time, it's like, you know, he went through all that to do this for her, and she's leaving. So it breaks off a piece of him and kind of helps sever another one of those ties that keeps him good.
Yeah, totally. And he says to Ahsoka, you know, I understand what you mean about walking away from the Order. And she says to him, I know.
Yeah.
And that implication is huge, of course. And let's not forget that Barriss, even in her guilt, lays down a Star Wives-esque diatribe against the Jedi Order. You created this. You are not what you were set out to be.
Yeah.
And she just plainly just shuts them down. This is the Jedi Order. We're just basically pawns in a war.
Absolutely.
And so that hits home. That's also part of what Ahsoka's going through. So the way that ends, and she walks down the stairs with the music, I mean, oh my God, it was, again, just like beat me with emotion. It was top notch.
Yeah. And, you know, it just, it brings it all together in such a sad conclusion because, you know, when she's exonerated, you're like, yay, okay, great. And then it's even worse than if she was, you know, found guilty, you know?
Yep, because she was found innocent and still left. And I mean, and that's a question that I had for you is that obviously from a perspective of storytelling, she wasn't in Revenge of the Sith. So they had to write her out of the story.
Sure.
But the way they wrote her out of the story, you just alluded to it. It was a massively important part of Anakin's fall.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to do it that way, I mean, that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant to be able to tie the loose end of the fact that she's not there yet, make it so that, oh, this is part of the reason why he went the way it did.
Yeah.
If you look at then the Siege of Mandalore is Obi-Wan's loss and changed him forever. Ahsoka leaving the Order is Anakin's loss and changes him forever. It's like, wow. Oof.
Oh, boy.
I have some dates here, okay?
Okay.
Disney bought Star Wars on October 30th, 2012.
Yeah.
And at this point, the first episode of Clone Wars Season 5 aired early 2023. 2013, sorry. So, less, you know, 6 months later. Everything was done, recorded, all that stuff, just a matter of releasing it.
Yeah.
And they were in process of writing Season 6.
Yes.
But they cut everything up. They just stopped all production. Mm-hmm. And so the last episode, season 5, episode 20, The Wrong Jedi, where she leaves the Order, aired March 1st, 2013. 1 year later on Netflix, March 6th, 2014, were The Lost Missions.
Yeah.
Phenomenal shows, worthwhile watching every one of them. But nothing, the repercussions of Ahsoka leaving, all gone. That storyline is just not finished. You know, it is what happened. Of course, it was finished, quote unquote, within Revenge of the Sith, but that massive emotional departure is sort of left dangling, as it were, until we get to July 19th, 2018, at the San Diego Comic-Con, the Clone Wars 10-year panel. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, what an event that was. I mean, I've watched that video a couple of times to see what would happen, but I assume you've seen that, but it is unbelievable to see I watched it a couple of days ago, and how that ends is just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody goes bananas, and it was just because the show wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to go back to a project that was axed and finish it the right way is fantastic. And obviously they were able to do just that, which is, you know, like a whole second chance.
Yeah. You know, and the way that Dave framed it, you know, as a thank you to the dedication of the fans for the past 10 years of the Clone Wars. And they played the video, and like you said, people lost their minds. Like, oh my God, are you kidding me? The Clone Wars saved. Like, oh, I'm freaking out. And then the person who's recording it goes back to the panel table, and Matt Lanter stands up, and he's like, yeah. He's like pumped up, like, yes, it's here. And then you look to his left, and Ashley is like bawling her eyes out with emotion, because not only is it an amazing story for her, but she just knows the impact it's having on the fans. And
yeah,
just, and then to have the closure of what Ahsoka went through in season 7 was like you said, it was just, it's the right way to finish it. And mm-hmm. without that story being told the way it was, and how that ended and how she departed from the original trilogy, they would have had to cover that with an Ahsoka series. But because they didn't have to, there's holes and gaps and stuff like that. That sort of really greenlit the option that they could actually approach an Ahsoka series without having to backfill what the hell happened in there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, like, with Maul, you know, being quote-unquote killed in The Phantom Menace and then showing up in Solo, it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So you can't really effectively execute that without filling in those gaps. So when you've mm-hmm. got that writing that is like, okay, well, this is what happened. This is how it happened. This is why it happened this way, so that she's not in those movies. But now you've got to a point where you can kind of explain that, and then explain where kind of she left it in Rebels, where she's still working with the Rebel Alliance, and
yeah.
and things are still kind of moving forward with her, you know, providing intel and helping to try and defeat the Empire. You know, so you've got all this information that helps to form, okay, so then where is she 6 years after Return yeah. of the Jedi? You know, so it's like, okay, well, we've explained kind of what she was doing, so it makes sense that here she is, then you can run off of that.
God, that's really well done. It's, yeah, that's a master plan in place there for sure. And thanks to Dave Filoni. And, you know, you can only imagine the Filoniverse movie that was announced recently mm-hmm. is one of the three movies coming out in a few years,
yeah.
bringing all that together. So with that kind of planning that was done, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you hope that it's going to spell for some pretty awesome storytelling in the next few years.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, it's the same crew that was behind that.
Yes.
So that's a huge part of it, too, because they are the most familiar with the source material. So
mm-hmm.
so you can imagine that they will also treat that with the same care that led to everyone's affection for those storylines and those characters, you know, back in the time of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, that's a phenomenal setup for what we could see in a few weeks.
Yeah, you know, they've got really anywhere they want to go now that they're not pigeonholed within these other stories. But, you know, either way, it'll be exciting to see kind of where they pick up from Rebels and how they proceed with her character.
Yeah.
So I guess with that being said, we owe a great many thanks to our hair and makeup by Tom of the Hyperion Adventures podcast. And
wardrobe too. Hey, don't sell him short.
I know. But we would be certainly up the creek without our back hair donations by Rob for the Jedi Temple Archives podcast.
Yeah.
So,
well done.
Anyway, if we still have listeners, they can find us. The very best place for them to find us is on our very own website, which is conversations.com. We are on facebook.com/conversations, at Swations on the Twitters, Instagrams at conversations, commerceswations at Etsy. We have our link.tree/conversations. And of course, as always, we are proud founding members of the Red 5 Podcast Network, hosted, of course, by Ro of the Scarif Podcast. And that is at bio.link/red5. That was like my homage to Ro, the kind of cadence.
There you go. That works. Go, Ro. There you go.
Yep. So I guess with that being said, the only way out of this one is to just talk about how when you're sitting with George and talking Star Wars, you start with these characters that you love and you build new ones that you love even more so, and then, well, it just leads to great Star Wars.
Greetings, listener. Just a reminder that the podcast you just heard is a proud member of the Red 5 Network family. Red5Network.com offers you a great variety of shows you'll be sure to love. So the next time you're itching for quality content, make sure you head over to Red5Network.com. You'll find this podcast along with a whole lot more. All wings report in. It's the Red 5 Network.